Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Censor, Holler, and Truman in Tennessee, An Intimate Conversation. Are we having an intimate conversation today, David? Hi, how are you?
Doing okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Very well, thank you.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. I hope that's true. And I guess this is about as intimate a conversation as we normally have these days, even
Correct.
Though it is going out to untold numbers of listeners. But hey, I regard all of them as intimates, I guess. And one of the nice things about this week's little list of films that I'm going to cover, they're all new films, they're all out right now, and they're all streaming right now, so they're easy to find, although you may also find them in theaters. Censor is certainly playing very widely in theaters. These movies were all directed by women. So that's nice to know because, as we know, the movies are still a male-dominated enterprise all too much. Always have been and still are more than they should be. But we do have more and more young female filmmakers coming up, and all these three movies were directed by female filmmakers. And on top of that, the director of Censor, Prano Bailey Bond, was listed by the trade paper Variety as a director to watch for this year, and the maker of Holler, Nicole Riegel, was named by Variety as a director to watch for last year, and I would say we can still watch her. So it's just very, very nice that the two of our three filmmakers have both been named very recently by Variety as directors to watch. And I agree that they have made good movies that do mark them definitely as talents with bright futures. So anyway, getting to these specific films, Censor is a horror movie, and as I've said many times, I rather like horror movies. It was directed and co-written by Prano Bailey Bond, and it is it's a good horror movie, and it's on a subject which is such a kind of a, in a way, when you think about it, a sort of a logical subject. I'm surprised it has not been tackled more often. Censor is a movie about somebody who censors movies. It's about somebody, a young woman in England, who censors movies. Now, all of this relates to something that some of our listeners may not know about, the idea of the video nasty. This was something that sort of was a big deal in England, in Britain, back in the 80s, in the 1980s, when movies were being circulated. It was still a pretty new thing on videotape, on VHS cassettes. And there were moral panics over some of these movies that they were considered obscene or profane or just bloody horrible in one way or another. And so the idea of the video nasties became a very big deal. And there were movies that you could actually get arrested and prosecuted for selling. And there were other movies that weren't quite up to that level, but that could be confiscated by the police if complaints were made. And it was a very big deal in England in the 1980s, and it had repercussions after the 1980s as well. So that was a real thing, the video nasties. That's what they were called, and there were lists made up of them with different levels of offensiveness and that sort of thing. And again, you could really be prosecuted for circulating some of these movies back in the old days of video cassettes. So that is what Censor is. That's sort of the background of the movie Censor. We have a young woman whose job is, her name is Enid, and her job is censoring movies. And she works in an office with others, and they have to look at these movies with all these horrible things, and they have arguments with each other. Should we take out this 4 seconds here, or should we leave in that 2 minutes there, and that kind of thing. But what happens is that this sort of overlaps with a very real trauma in Enid's own actual life, which is to say she had a younger sister who many years earlier disappeared, was apparently abducted in the woods. Enid was there, and the young sister has never been found. And it's been years and years and years have passed now. And Enid remains traumatized by this thing that happened to a very near and dear person to her in the past. And as she goes about her job censoring movies, sometimes memories of this trauma and just awareness of this trauma, which still exists in her life, are reawakened. And so it becomes a kind of a crossover between her real life as a censor of horrible movies, very often horror movies, and these memories and this trauma in her life. And then she gets the idea that the young actress in one of the movies that she is censoring might in fact be her sister, now having grown up and she was abducted. Maybe she ended up being a captive or maybe even a willing participant in the making of awful kinds of horrible, violent movies and so forth. And so that is what the movie is basically about. It is about this film censor named Enid and how her work overlaps with this trauma in her own life and unsettles, destabilizes her own psychology. Now, this is the interesting thing for me about the movie Censor. As it goes along, it gets wilder and wilder. It gets crazier and crazier as Enid's own grasp on what is real and what is right, not real, and what is past and what is present blurs in her own mind. So the movie itself gets very sort of unstable and crazy. It reminded me a little bit of the fairly recent horror movie called Mother, which I liked a lot, which the longer it went along, the crazier it got and the wilder it got. And I just really respected it as a big, a really important act of creation. And Censor, I think, is a similar kind of a movie. It's just so creative. It's just always trying new things and going in directions you didn't expect. And by the end of it, well, it's almost like a hallucination, like a delirium, and I liked it. So look out, Censor has its violent moments, its horrible moments. Sometimes I think they're so over the top that they're meant as parodies of the kinds of movies that were became video nasties back in the 1980s. But, you know, it can be a little bit rough to watch. But overall, I really enjoyed Censor. I think it's a good horror movie, and it's a good crazy horror movie and a good unpredictable horror movie. And if that's the sort of thing you want to see, then by all means, check out Censor. Holler was written and directed by Nicole Riegel, again, another director recently singled out by Variety as a director to watch. And my golly, she does appear to be a really talented woman, although unlike the movie Censor, the movie Holler is, you know, sort of starkly realistic in all kinds of ways. It is not delirious or hallucinatory or particularly horrific, even though the subject matter can be pretty rough at times. So here we have, again, the main character is a young woman, and she is she lives a very sort of destabilized, unstable life. Her name is Ruth, and her older brother thinks that she really ought to go to college. And in fact, she's applied to college, but she doesn't really want to go to college, but maybe she thinks, oh, maybe I ought to go to college, that sort of thing. But the main thing that affects that and every other aspect of their lives is they simply don't have any money. They are two young adults. They have not responsibly set themselves up in this early stage of their lives. And if she's going to go to college, or even if she's not going to go to college, they're going to have some way of supporting themselves. And so the way it turns out to be is that her brother gets a job working in a metal scrapyard, but it's sort of a dodgy place. And the basic idea is they sort of go out and steal metal and then bring it back to the scrapyard, where the very dishonest owner of the scrapyard pays them for it and eventually employs them to work full-time for him. So that's what they are doing. They are thieving. They are stealing. They are stealing metal from all different kinds of places they can find, metal stealing it, making away with it in the dead of night and bringing it to the scrapyard and selling it there. The scrapyard, in the meanwhile, is selling things to a Chinese dealer. So there's a little political dimension work in here as well. And that's basically what it is, about the adventures and the very harrowing dangers faced by Ruth and her brother as they go through, as they live this kind of very, 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 very unstable and always risky kind of life. So again, it's a pretty realistic movie. It's obviously a low-budget movie. It's not fancy in any way at all. It has a lot of very interesting characters, most of whom are lowlifes in one way or another. And we have the idea, well, will Ruth one of these days get her act together a little bit and maybe go to college, or at least make more direct plans about going to college or something like this? Or is she just going to keep on doing this stuff, just doing the thieving and the stealing and the living in danger, and then, oh, some awful things happen along the way. One of their colleagues gets killed, and the guy who they're working for is obviously very dangerous too. And anyway, that's what Holler is about. So we have here a kind of a movie you don't see all that much anymore. It's basically a sort of a very straightforward drama, but it centers on lively young characters who are not living their lives in very good ways, and maybe they'll improve, and maybe they won't. Maybe they'll get themselves together mentally, morally, spiritually, maybe they won't. And sort of that's all part of the tension of watching the movie. It's very well made on its very low budget. It's very well acted. And again, Nicole Riegel, who wrote it and directed, I think is a real, I agree with Variety, a real talent to watch. She really knows what she's doing, and she's put together a very intense little melodrama here on a low budget, and it works really well. And if you're interested in young characters and especially female characters, Holler is another movie to watch. It's a good picture. Our final movie for today, Jill, takes us in very different directions. Yeah, so far we've had two fiction movies, a horror movie and a kind of a melodrama. Now we go to a documentary, which was made by Lisa Immordino Vreeland. She specializes in documentaries about artistic subjects. She's made documentaries before now about Peggy Guggenheim, the art patron and collector, about Cecil Beaton, the great photographer and movie designer, and about not surprisingly, Diana Vreeland, the former editor of Harper's Bazaar. That's the kind of movie that Lisa Immordino Vreeland makes. And this time she has set her sights on two really phenomenally great writers of the 20th century, both of whom I admire enormously. And I was so happy when I saw this movie was coming out. And now I'm so happy that I've gotten to see it. And again, it is streaming and also playing theatrically. Truman and Tennessee, An Intimate Conversation. And not surprisingly, the main characters of this documentary are Truman Capote, the very great novelist and occasional playwright, and Tennessee Williams, the great playwright and occasional novelist and short story writer and poet. They were both multi-talented people. Truman Capote, probably best known for his novella Breakfast at Tiffany's, which was made into a very memorable movie by Blake Edwards many years ago. Also very well known for what he called his nonfiction novel, where he basically invented a whole new literary form, In Cold Blood, the very true story of a horrific multiple murder that took place many years ago. And he wrote this nonfiction story as if it were a novel, as if it were fiction. And it's a legendary work. Tennessee Williams, best known probably for some of his earlier plays, A Streetcar Named Desire, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, The Glass Menagerie, a little bit later on, Night of the Iguana, and various others. And again, a very, very, very great writer who I had the privilege of briefly meeting many, many years ago, very memorable for me. Anyway, I just respect both of these writers just enormously, Truman Capote and Tennessee Williams, and I was thrilled that a movie came out, and it's a movie about the two of them, because they knew each other. They were not really close with each other, but they had a relationship for many, many years. Both were very famously gay at a time when being famously gay was not particularly accepted and could, in fact, be risky to people. But they both were, even though they weren't lovers. They were just sort of friends and sometimes enemies. You know, they had their quarrels and their offs and ons in their relationship. But that's what the movie deals with. So it's not so much the movie's subtitle is An Intimate Conversation. It's not so much an intimate conversation between them. It's more like the filmmaker, Lisa Immordino Vreeland, more like her idea of an intimate conversation with these two great, now long dead writers. So the movie deals with their relationship and also with their individual careers. So sometimes we're dealing with them together and times when they intersected with each other, when they were together in the same place or doing the same kind of thing at the same time. And other times we're following the two down their separate paths through life and through their literary careers and so forth. We see excerpts from interviews with them by some famous interviewers, people like David Frost and Dick Cavett. They both were very public people, both Capote and Williams, and they both did a lot of sort of public public work like that, interviews. And they were celebrities in their time, and they were on television and that kind of thing. And then other times we are seeing archival photographs of them at various stages of their careers, and we're hearing their voices from their diaries and letters and so forth, both read by actors on the soundtrack. And so it's a pretty varied varied movie in the way it presents its material. It's about two people who have been dead for a long time, and so again, it's mostly archival old footage, old photos, old recordings, that kind of thing, and then current people reading their words on the soundtrack. But I found it absolutely fascinating. It's not a great documentary. It's not an innovative documentary. It doesn't mark out new artistic trails in nonfiction cinema or anything like that. But it's just a wonderful, affectionate portrait of these two terrific, terrific literary artists, both of whom, again, I have just respected enormously for most of my life. And I'm just so pleased to see them getting this kind of attention now in a movie that's being very widely circulated. I hope it revives their reputations and encourages new people to intersect with them and to check out their work and to get involved with them the way I have been for decades. Truman Capote and Tennessee Williams, very, very great talents. Truman and Tennessee, an intimate conversation, a very lovely and, yes, intimate film about the two of them. So that is my somewhat intimate story this week, Jill.
And this was our intimate conversation, for which we thank you very much, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Censor, Holler, and Truman and Tennessee, an intimate conversation.